Ben Moore has been in love with bees for as long as anyone can remember. And as far as we can tell, the feeling is entirely mutual. Although he still sometimes feels the sting of his passion. Hang around, learn a little. It's as sweet as honey and always a buzz. It's the Ultimate Pollinators Podcast with Ben, his friends and associates, and of course, Ben's bees.
Hey everyone, Bees with Ben. Wow. Got an episode today. Now, if someone's got some credentials to talk about bees, talk about varroa, I've got the person. This is going to be absolutely 100% a brilliant episode. Over 40 years of industry experience working with bees. So this is going to be absolutely awesome. And on the line, I have Steve Fuller. Thank you so much for your time, Steve.
No, that's all okay, Ben.
This is really good. I'm absolutely excited for this. Now, Steve, I always ask the question, bees, how did you first get started into it?
Oh, look, Ben, that's a damn long question, mate. My brother and I, we both worked in sawmill, and my brother was being taught all about trees, and he happened to be out in the bush one day, and a beekeeper come along. This is late 70s, and he put his bees down, and he said, yep, real easy, I just come back in a couple of weeks and get the honey off them. And my brother come home, and he said, Steve, found the job for us. And I've gone, what's that? And he said, bees. And I looked at him and sort of laughed. And he said, yeah, we'll buy some bees and we'll put them in the bush and we'll get the honey.
Love it.
So I think it was about 78, 77 or 78, we bought fire pies. And, that's where we started, mate.
That's awesome. And Wayne still helps you today, doesn't he?
Yeah, so it's really a family business. There's Wayne and myself, we do most of the bee work, and then we've had both our all our children work through the business too at one time. So Wayne does the honey side, which is certified organic honey, and I now do all the pollination side.
Awesome. What a fantastic, I love that experience, you know what I mean, with the family all involved. That is awesome. Now, I said before the start, the intro, credentials. Now, you said you're going to take a while to answer the question about keeping, how you got started in the bees, but geez, your CV, tell us about that.
Well, as I say, I'll go back to the start. As I said, we started with five hives. We used to move them with a ute and trailer. And I remember our very first extract was in the kitchen with an old two-frame Penders hand crank. And we got about 30 kilo of honey, and we thought we were beekeepers.
Love it.
Right. And then we ended up, we bought a few more bees, and then until we ended up buying a bloke out with an old truck.
Okay.
And I think we had it for 3 weeks when we done the diff. So we were stuck in the bush. We got that fixed, and then we blew the motor up and got that fixed. And, the extraction shed at that time was on 44s, and you had to get, like, sea legs and go from there. So you might as well say the rest is history. We learnt pretty hard and we learnt pretty quick, but we now run an operation of 4,000 to 5,000 hives with 20 employees, and at some stage of the game my brother or myself has been in virtually every part of the industry that you can think of.
Okay. And so rattle off a few of those, because obviously the one that most people should know is ARBIC, Australian Honeybee Industry Council. What others?
My brother's a director of BeeQual.
Okay.
So not really on ARBIC. I haven't gone to ARBIC. I've been president of New South Wales last year. I've just been voted out about 3-4 weeks ago.
Okay.
I'm was an executive member before. I am AgriFutures honeybee and pollination panel member. I'm on the Five Bees Wean Bee Project. I'm on Standards Australia for setting a standard for honey, propolis, beeswax, all that sort of stuff. What else am I? I'm North Coast branch president for the New South Wales Apiarist Association. I'm also, I work with roughly around 10 to 14 universities. I'm deemed, I do witness accounts or things like that where there's poisonings.
Okay.
I'm involved with crop pollination. Where do you want me to stop?
Wow, I was going to say, I'm thinking two things. You said you got into bees in 1978. Well, that was the year I was born, which was 45 years ago, and I'm just starting to get grey now. But I'm just thinking, Steve, just the time, because, you know, obviously managing hives, and obviously you got helpers, employees sort of, you know, helping behind the scenes there as well. But, geez, it really – well, I've got to say, the passion, you know what I mean? You just buy – you know, the first 5 minutes, you're just absolutely beaming passion with bees, and that's important.
Look, Ben, bees isn't about money. It's like being a farmer, right? And I say to people, when it comes down to that, even a normal job. So let's start back at just anyone who has a job, and we all know what it's like to like your job.
Yes,
and when you some people say I'm absolutely obsessed with bees, but look, I absolutely love them. They fascinate me. You know, when you take a little insect that's not even 2 centimeters long, can fly 5 kilometers, land on a flower, come back, tell all the other girls in the house, keep the house clean, keep the house at 35, 36 degrees, gather food. No one sits down or anything. They are fascinating. So, yes, I am really fascinated and enthralled by it.
Love it. Absolutely love it. Now, obviously, we've got lots and lots to talk about, but, you know, one thing, so obviously 1978, 45 years ago, what sort of some changes that you've seen between sort of then and now? Like, you know, it could be good changes or bad changes.
As I said, when we first got into bees, the biggest problem we had was called wax moth.
Okay.
And everyone in the beekeeping game had spotter hives, and everyone knew whose hives were who. So when I say that, a spotter hive was a hive that was left in the bush, and just about everyone went to it and checked it. But no one ever took it.
Okay.
So, yeah, theft wasn't a big issue, or vandalism wasn't a big issue or anything like that. So other than wax moth, if someone said they had AFB, we used to have a party just to go around and have a look at what AFB was like.
Okay, yep.
So you can now – we'll go through, and I'm going to get this wrong around the wrong ways, but I think it was about 1980 – in the 80s anyway, when chalk brood, I think, come into New South Wales through Queensland. EFB come in early 90s, I think it was, from Victoria. Then we had sack brood, the timeline might be 100% right, but anyway. And then you might as well say in the early 2000s, we ended up with a small little black beetle up here in the North Coast called small hive beetle.
Yes.
Now you shoot forward to 2022, and we have Varroa.
Yes.
So you might as well say beekeeping in the 70s and 80s wasn't too hard. But from the 2000s onwards with hive beetle and now Varroa, if you don't love it, it's going to be hard.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, well, let's jump in. So Varroa mites, I mean, we've got lots to talk about. Now, if someone's got credentials to talk about it, it's you. Tell us that first, I guess, phone call, the first notification that you got, Steve, that was like, shit, you know what I mean? It's on our doorstep. You know what I mean? Tell us about that first time you're notified of that.
Well, being president of New South Wales, of course, you get these phone calls, and you don't know where to start. You don't know if it's just something they're putting in to see what the reaction's going to be like. The biggest problem is no one in the history of New South Wales or Australia has ever had to deal with this problem.
Mm.
So I had no one to turn to. It was fly by the seat of your pants. Yes, I'd been most probably prepping my business because it was more sooner than later or when we're going to get it. And I just happened to be in the hot seat. And look, I can't tell you what goes through your mind. I look back at that day, and that was the Wednesday, the 22nd of June. And you're not allowed to say anything until we've got everything in place. So I had to walk around for 3 days and can't tell anyone. And I've got the biggest problem on New South Wales history sitting on my shoulders.
On your shoulders, yeah.
Yep.
Shit.
Hard.
So you got that. That's happened 3 days in what? Fourth day. What happened, Steve?
Fourth day. Well, actually, I ended up having to go to Queensland. So I was notified on Wednesday morning. I was heading to Queensland conference. I was told to still go. I went. I had to announce it to Queensland. So here's the New South Wales president standing up at the Queensland conference telling them that New South Wales has Varroa. That went over like a lead balloon.
Mm.
And the next day I was told to hang around for a little while, and then all of a sudden I got the call and I had to drive from Queensland to Maitland to be in what we call the LCC or the local command centre to give guidance and help with orders. Give background descriptions on what will happen with the bees here. How do we handle it? How long do we shut the state down? Do we, all these things that you're heavily involved in.
So Steve, was there a plan for when Varroa was detected? So was there a plan, and was that executed as per plan? So what happened there?
Yeah, no, look, Ben, there really was. We've had a plan in action or in place, should I say, for many, many years. But the problem is when it's actual, this is real, right? So when you have a plan, you can have all the scenarios, but if the scenario don't work out, you just go back and start again.
Yeah, okay.
This time you can't wipe it out. You've got it. And if you make a mistake, you know what I mean? It's these are big mistakes that you're making, because you're not just going to go, it's all right, don't worry about it. It's like I'm affecting people's lives.
Mm.
Their incomes, their mental ability and everything like that. But not only theirs, your own, the industry, the Australia. Like, it's a big burden to carry, let me tell you.
So, yeah, so that's and so what support did you have sort of around you? So this is the first sort of week, Steve. What support was around you to help you and, you help others?
Yeah, look, I have to say with the actual plan, how it's instigated, or put in place. So let's say the bee industry had a plan, but we're not. Most of the people who were involved in industry associations and the likes, we're volunteers. This is what a lot of people don't realise. So don't forget, I've still got my business sitting at home, although we're having a lot of rain up there at the north coast at that time too. We've just lost, I think, about 800 hives in the floods, in the north coast floods.
Bloody hell.
Yep. Yeah. So who ran it was, the DPI was in charge, but they ended up bringing in people like Rural Fire, so the fire department, and these people are really good at managing disaster situations. So if you work 7 days on, you had to take 2 days off. You had to have your allocated times off. If people were working around you, noticed that you weren't coping, they stepped in. Okay. So look, they are really good, group of guys to work with. So at the end of the day, I'm going to say, look, they were my main support.
Okay. Okay. That's, yeah, that's good. That's interesting you mentioned about the fire department sort of coming in there and actually helping. You know what I mean? Someone, you know, they may not necessarily know about bees, but they know, as you're saying, is basically it's a disaster. So, yeah, absolutely. That's very interesting. So we're in the command center, DPI there, and the plan is obviously there's a big program, a lot of volunteers helping, checking hives for varroa.
Yep.
How did you feel that went as far as, you know, all these hives getting inspected, whether they'll be recreational or commercial beekeepers?
Look, that was no problem. The problem was getting everyone to notify us of their hives. Like, now, look, I know everyone goes on about the killing of hives or the euthanizing of hives and all this. But the thing is, we tried to get a circle around it so that we could eliminate the spread. That was the idea of it. If we can control the spread, then maybe we have a chance of eradicating. Now, I understand, and I've been there, and I can go on to a little bit about my own business being involved. But the thing is to find out where it is, because if it was only a small spread, maybe we can get our hands on it and, you know, end up ridding Australia of the varroa. That would be good. But, hey, we've still got people coming out of the woodwork at the moment.
Yes.
So it's hard. That is hard. That's the hardest thing.
That's
getting people to accept it.
Yeah, to accept it. Because it's interesting as well, Farm Online, I think it was the 12th of October 2022, there was a really good article, and I think you sort of called it then that we may not, varroa mites can't be eradicated. So you called it,
yeah,
sort of, you know, a few months after that initial incursion. Your thoughts on that, Steve?
Yeah, look, that was a Senate inquiry. As I said, look, the family's growing up in the bush. I'm just going to go back a little bit, and we lost 1,400 hives in the fires, in the bushfires, right? The next year after that, we lost about 200 hives in the mid-North Coast floods. Then the next floods up at Ismore, we lost 800 hives there. Then we're going to fast forward to the varroa, and I've lost about 300 to euthanase, and then through mismanagement and the likes, I've lost another 200-300 hives. Now, when I talk bushfire, I've been in some of the areas where it is only sticks left in the ground. And next minute, a bee will come out. And you go, there's no bees left in this area. There's no beehives, should I say. No managed beehives left in that area. They're either burnt or they're burnt. There's no ifs, buts, or maybes. And if they can survive a fire that is that intense, it's unbelievable. Now, I've also done some studies through recognised scientists who have tried to eliminate feral bees and managed bees. And this is what it comes down to. Bees have been around for 130 million years. Now, they've survived volcano eruptions. They've survived a lot of other things, and they're still here. Now, when they started doing the baiting, whatever there's natural resources there, the bees will go to the natural resources. They'll never go to something man-made. You can put all the sugar out you want. You can even stand honey. When the bees are on a flow, they will not rob. So, in my personal opinion, if we got on to the feral hives earlier, I believe we would have had a lot better standing than what we are now.
That's right? Interesting. Interesting.
And it's not the managed hives. Why everyone says, what about the managed hives? We know where they are. They're easy to pick up. The feral hives is the ones we don't know where they are. They could be up the top of a tree. They could be in a chimney. They could be in a house. They could be in all sorts of conglomerate things. But at the end of the day, they're the hardest to control. So this is like, and not only that, look, as I said, I've watched a lot of these other incursions, you can call them, from chalk brood and small high beetle, get spread around the country on the back of a truck.
Yes, yeah.
And, you know, like, this is what I'm saying. Like, yes, I know it's not fun to watch your hives get destroyed, but if we got a chance of beating something to keep Australia green, wasn't that the way to go?
Yeah, exactly.
And it only takes one mite. That's the whole problem. One mite. She is pregnant when she leaves that cell, and it starts again.
That's so interesting, Steve. You just mentioned about obviously the feral hive. So, I suppose in an ideal world, we should have been knocking them out 5 years ago. You know what I mean? Previously, to actually minimize or even prevent, you know what I mean, the spread of variety. So, now you mentioned as well, obviously, if you don't mind, let's talk about the impact on the varroa mite and your business, because you're New South Wales, you know what I mean? You see all these purple zones and blue zones and red zones. What impact has it had on you as far as your business, and where are your bees?
Well, you see, everyone thinks that I'm sitting in an ivory tower and I'm all, what's name, it's fine for me and all this. As I said, I'm in the middle of LCC, and what's name, I then get told that varroa is found in my backyard at Nana Glen.
Okay.
So this is right in the middle of the berry pollination area. So the Coffs Harbour area, actually, we produce approximately 80% of the berries in Australia. And when I say berries, that's blueberries, raspberries and blackberries. And the only thing that why I didn't have more hives in there is because of all the rain before varroa hit. I just couldn't move hives. Hives were stuck in bushes and all this sort of stuff. So once that zone got deemed a red zone, it was a no-go anywhere. So, yeah, I lost 300 in that first round of euthanasia. People go, oh, yeah, but you got reimbursed for it. Well, yes, I did get reimbursed, but I only got reimbursed for what the hives were then.
Yes.
Not what they're going to produce me.
Correct.
Yep. And continue my business and pay my bills.
Yes.
Then when you go out to the purple zone, that's the next thing. I had more, another 500 and almost 600 and something odd hives there. But anyway, yes, I got reimbursed a box of honey. But I've lost near on $1 million. Just having those bees caught up in that area. And then, like, people go, oh, don't worry about the farmers and all this. But the farmers, they also lost their summer crop.
Mm.
They also lost their September crop of raspberries and blackberries. We only got to put the bees back in March-ish. And this is in the red zone, of course, eradication. And they lost a lot of fruit from earlier on. So, like, people go, oh, yeah, that's okay. It's only a few people. You are talking hundreds of people that have been affected. Now, my business, yes, we are big. Borderline to a large beekeeping business. If we didn't have some of our bees, or about three-quarters of our bees in the blue zone, I don't know where we'd be today. But that's what saved us there. And, you know, it's been a real struggle. And it's 12 months in, and we are still struggling to get back to some form of normality. To move a hive, I have to put in permits, which take a couple of days to get. Then if it rains in the meantime, you might have to reapply for the permit. It's not just the declaration that the guys have got in the blue zone. I'm working in purple and red zone. And it's only last Friday that we've been now allowed to go and work our hives in the red zones.
Really? So only last Friday. So they've been sitting. Sorry, Steve. So I'll jump in there.
Yeah.
It's only just recently you'll be able to work, you know, your bees that are in the red zones. So have they been sitting there, you know, in situ since last year?
No, they come in and kill. They come in and eradicated all the hives, all managed hives last year. About 1,500 hives were euthanized in the red zone. And because if they didn't allow pollination back in now, it would have been about $40 million to the berry industry.
Okay.
And that would have just pulled the rug clean out from underneath the response.
Big time.
Yeah. Yeah. And so what they wanted us to do, we had a meeting up at Woolgoolga, and they turned around and said, look, okay, we're going to allow you. We don't think there's any more varroa there. We weren't getting, the bait stations weren't working. We've detected nothing in the feral hives, rah, rah, rah. If you just go back in, we'll use your hives as sentinel hives, and we'll also get the pollination done. And we looked at it, we weighed up the risk factor, and we thought, yep, okay, it's some income for us, it's some normality, but we didn't expect them to say that you weren't allowed to work your bees. So in the end, we've had the bees in, now we're allowed to work them, so we can maintain them, which is great. So we can go, we can move forward.
Okay, so move on. So were they, in that duration of time, Steve, were they actually managed at all? Like, were the DPI coming in and checking them, or were they just sort of sitting there just waiting for some paperwork to get cleared?
The DPI actually come through and put miticide strips through.
Okay, yep.
This is red zone. They also done some in the purple zone. Purple zone you could move and work. But the red zone, no. Once they went onto the farm, that's where they stayed. You weren't allowed to touch them. You weren't even allowed to go in and stand them up if they got knocked over.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. So, and that's why I was pretty cranky because, I wouldn't have put more bees back in if I wasn't allowed to work them. And it's great now that we're allowed to.
You're allowed to, okay. And yeah. So with those bees in the red zone working, what sort of formalities do you have to do? Is there sort of a paperwork that you've got to regularly do? How does that work, sort of managing these bees in the red zone?
Well, the paperwork I've got to do, it's virtually down to the registration of my vehicle, my license, what time I went to the toilet. It's pretty in-depth, yeah.
Okay.
And you've got to keep that for 5 years.
Okay, wow.
So, it's intense. But the thing is, what people have got to remember, if anyone finds varroa mite in these areas, we don't get reimbursed. We lose everything that we put in. So we're gambling. But these farmers can't pick up their farms and move them out west and say, hey, yeah, we'll put it in the middle of the desert.
Yeah.
You know? So these guys are stumped too. So in a sense, it's sort of, people are saying, oh, well, what's in it, what's not? Well, okay, what the whole deal is, if we can prove that there's no more mites up here, then that area then can go from red to purple. And if we get another year with no more mites, it can go all back to blue.
Okay.
So it's trying to prove something. And as I said, get back to some normality. Coming back to the answer before about mites. Yes, the Newcastle area is a different area. Up here, I strongly believe that they contained it before it got out.
Okay, that's good. Okay. Mm. So, Steve, I know we can't predict the future. All right. Mm-hmm. Beekeeping industry next 5 years. If you could predict it, what would you be saying? As far as, we'll go Australia wide. I'm in Victoria.
Yep.
What do you think is going to happen? I know it's a hearsay and so forth, and it's just a prediction. But what do you think?
Well, the biggest thing is, we'll go back to the 22nd of June last year, and that's when beekeeping in Australia changed. All right. Now this was a wake up call to beekeepers. We've had a pretty bloody easy, really. But now it's a different story. I would love to say that we can eradicate I'm for eradication, so don't get me wrong when I say that. But look at the size of the land now. Mm. What, 1 million acres? It's massive. It's a massive area that we're covering. And we still haven't got to the feral hives.
Okay.
So moving forward, can we slow the spread? Hopefully, yeah. But we've got to learn. And this is a learning curve. And the biggest problem is reinfecting.
Yes.
So in other words, if we're allowed to bring bees into an area that has varroa mite, and our bees are clean to go in, then they get infected. The varroa mite kills out the feral bees or whatever bees are infected. Then our bees swarm. And it, yeah, and you see, it's just a merry-go-round.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Yeah. So what's going to happen in the next 5 years? Guys have got to be intense beekeeping. And I'm not saying that they've got to, but they've got to be, there's no more, she'll be right, mate,
yes,
attitude.
Yes.
Right. So, you know, like, whereas before you could go and put a load, or not put a load, but put bees down somewhere and not come back for a couple of months like you used to in winter.
Yes, yeah.
You will need to be more vigilant, more on point. Don't just, take it for granted that they'll be okay. Because one thing I learned about varroa is you will have varroa in your beehive for 12 months before you will realize you have varroa.
Mm.
And that's what a lot of people don't realize. So, you know, it's not this big orange spot on the back of a bee or on a pupa. The thing is, that's what we see in pictures. When you actually see it for yourself, it's nothing like that. When you see those sorts of indications, that hive's just about dead.
Yeah, okay. Yes, yep. It's almost
close. So, yeah.
And Steve, so obviously there's so many elements to this, and just, you just sort of talked about the pollination side of things, but I'm aware of beekeepers unable to use their facilities, unable to, you know, you just mentioned before you've got to put your rego or your car if you go, you know, checking one of your apiaries in the red zone. Now, to my knowledge, I suppose I call myself lucky. I'm in Victoria and, you know, it's rather cold down here at the moment, but, you know, well away from the mite. So, but as far as my knowledge, I understand, is if you've got a shed that you're in a red zone, you can't actually use your shed or you can't use your equipment. Well, can you tell us a bit about that, please, Steve?
Yeah, look, this is what they're actually called, they're called DCM, all right? So that's a dangerous contact, DCP, sorry, a dangerous contact premise.
Okay.
All right.
DCP. Okay.
So what that means is possibly varroa mite were found at your location. All right. Now, or you had varroa mite within your bees. Now, the biggest thing I'm going to say here, it's a mite. Now, if it was an AFB or similar pathogen, right, that can live on machinery or live on boxes and all this, you see, once you remove varroa mite from a host, it's dead within 5 to 6 days.
Mm, okay. Yep.
Right. Now, so once again, bees, yes, they come to our extraction sheds to rob a free meal if they can, and yes, we bring bees home when we're robbing honey, but we don't try to bring, like, they're things that we try and limit, right? So these guys that aren't allowed to use their facilities or whatever areas or whatever parts they've got in there, really need to be, you know, helped out. Because, look, imagine being shut out of your house and saying, hey, you can't go home.
Yes, yeah.
And this, because these aren't things that you don't go to Woolworths and buy them off the shelf and just throw them in the backyard. You know, it's not a garden shed. These are massive, big operations that you're talking about with extraction plants and heating facilities and bottling facilities. I'm lucky that my facility's in the blue, but there's at least four guys I know of that are quite large, that their facilities they can't use. And they can't just pack it up and move somewhere else.
No, that's right. You've got, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of equipment. So so the DPI have basically, so was it DCP? So they've gone, they've shut it down, and you're not even allowed to go there. You can't touch anything.
You can go there, but you're not allowed to remove the equipment from there. You're not allowed to take B boxes from there. Even though they haven't had a B in them for 21 days or they've been frozen or anything like that, you're still not allowed to do it.
Okay. So how do we how do we change that, Steve? Is there a way that we can, you know what I mean? Because these poor beekeepers, because that's going to affect their, it's a no-brainer. It's going to affect their livelihoods. And it stems down. We could have little Johnny who's, you know, out of high school or out of university or whatever, and he's working, you know what I mean? That's going to limit the work he can do. So he may get laid off because he can't help. So there's this big chain that's going to affect. So is there anything we can do to help these beekeepers?
There is. And firstly, we'll just go back a little bit. It's a bit of a swear word. It's called common sense.
Yes, yes.
Right? And sometimes common sense has got to prevail. So if, like, when I say that, like, if something is frozen down, wrapped, secured, bro and white can't live in it. Bees can't live in it. Not like that. Now, yes, AFB can live in a box, well, up to 75 years.
Yes.
It can lay dormant. And when you put bees back in, it becomes again. With Varroa mite, 5 days, 2 days in a freezer, whatever you want to do. Wrap it, and it can be, you might as well say, demited.
Mm.
And those boxes should be safe. Now, if you then take them off the bees, keep them off bees for a further 21 days, all wrapped up, you've got to be careful they don't get mothed, or you've got to be careful if you're up here further they don't get slimed. But these are things that you can do with common sense. Now, that also comes down to everyone being right and doing the right thing. In other words, they have to wrap them, they have to seal them, they have to turn around and fumigate them or freeze them and things like this. So we call it playing the game. And that way they should be allowed to use their facilities. Now, I've been in discussions with epidemiologists and they said, oh, no, the risk factor, the risk factor. Well, gee whiz, there's a risk factor that I walk out my front door tonight and get run over by a bloody bus. Mm. I still walk out the freaking door.
Exactly, yeah. So, okay, so so I suppose the question is there anything, obviously, you know, common sense, totally, totally agree with you there, Steve, but is there anything that we, you know, listeners, you know, I mean, we've got quite a few listeners coming up to about almost 110,000 plays on this podcast. Is there anything that, you know, a beekeeper at home could help these bigger beekeepers?
Well, if there's a beekeeper out of his own, then this is like, what's going to happen is these beekeepers, then when you can't use your land because it's either purple or red, you're going to get unused land out further on, or you're going to be talking to other beekeepers. So I do ask beekeepers to turn around and help each other. That's a big ask. Because then it also pushes bees onto you as well, right? I ask everyone, if they see something illegal, that's our biggest problem. Like, you know, please, look, I know the old Australian adage of, oh, I don't want to be a dobber and all this, but what are we going to do? If we don't work for the benefit of the industry, there's going to be more beekeepers go out. There's going to be, you know, people that grow up not seeing a bee until they're 20, 30 years old by the sounds of it. You know what I mean? Like, because it's just really changed the dynamics of beekeeping. That's the biggest problem.
Yeah, exactly. Has there been talk with the DPI in changing these rules where they these beekeepers can't use their facilities, their DCPs?
There has. I will say some of the people that have been advising these DPI guys ain't got 2 cents in between them.
Yeah.
Some of the things that have been said and told to them. And look, the DPI are really, and I'm like, you know, most people get shocked for saying this, but at the end of the day, they're in a rock and a hard spot too.
Because
if they're damned if they didn't do a real good job, then everyone would have been on their back.
Of course.
And now that we've had a red hot go, everyone's going, oh, you're going too bloody hard.
Yes.
But, you know, it's like what I said before about the fireys. You've got to let people who are, let's say, experts or well-versed in areas come forward and put their two bob in. And that way we should be able to come to a good agreement. Like, it's not all about me. This is an industry here. That's what's being affected. And then that goes down the livelihoods of two individuals.
Mm.
So, yeah, what can we do? We've discussed it. We've tried to do this. We come up with a good plan, but then the risk factor comes in. As I said, some of the risk factors you'll never mitigate. You'll never, ever get something that is completely risk-free. Other than that, what do you say? How do we change it? I can't come up with an answer. I'll say that.
Mm. Do you think, just sort of finalising it all, Steve, do you think that we all need to learn to live with it? Just, I suppose, like COVID, really. It's kind of, I know it's an analogy I've used previously, but do you think we need to just learn to live with varroa, or there is still a chance?
Ben, there's two good points you made there. And look at varroa when varroa first, I'm sorry, look at COVID when COVID first came out. COVID killed people.
Yes.
And people still broke the rules.
Yes.
Right? Now, the varroa mite's not going to kill people. It's going to kill an industry.
Mm.
Can we live with it? I'll tell you now, the cost in the first 2 to 3 years, you're going to lose 80% of your bees. So we can't just throw our hands up and walk away from this, right? This has to be something that we really, really, really need to sit down and think through very, very carefully before we start going to management. Because once management comes in, you will not have any more feral bees.
Yeah.
Okay? That's the one thing that people think that, oh, it'll be right, it'll go back to normal. No, it will not go back to normal. So therefore, now because I've got to spend a lot more time managing my hives, I now, let's say that varroa might declare endemic. I'm now going to be spending about another $100 to $150 a year on every box just to keep it alive. Every beehive, that's what it's going to cost me. So I now have to on-pass that to my growers and orchards, and they're not going to absorb it. So who does that onflow to? The consumer.
The consumer. Mm.
So everyone's going to be affected. The thing is, can we sufficiently slow this to learn how to live with this? The biggest thing that Australia has got is we've got the rest of the world. We can learn from the rest of the world. We can learn from New Zealand, America, and all these places that are throwing millions of dollars at varroa and go, right, what did they do wrong? How can we do it better? And that's what we've got to do. That's what we've got to utilize. So if we can slow it down and learn, it's going to be easier. But I'd still like to see it eradicated.
Yes. Give it that red hot crack to deal with it. Steve, that was absolutely fantastic. What I'd like to do, if it's okay, a year from today, 27th of June, 2024, let's have another chat.
Yep.
Let's have another chat and see what's changed.
Yep.
See which way the conversations, you know, change, what people are talking about, what the DPI are doing. That's a year from today. How's that sound?
That sounds really good.
And Steve, thank you so much for your time. That was absolutely fantastic. I know you're a busy man. You're all over the country. Thank you. Thank you once again.
No worries. Thank you for having me, Ben.
That was absolutely fantastic, that episode. Steve, really appreciate your time. Really gives you something to think about, you know, especially, you know, these rules and regulations, you know what I mean? It's, you know, beekeepers can't use their facilities, their DCPs. So it gives you a lot to think about. Now, it's all right for a commercial, a recreational beekeeper at home with, you know, one, two or three hives, but there's people that with their livelihoods at stake here, their jobs, their families. And as I said, that stems through to, you know, people helping them and staff. So lots to think about it. Don't forget, until next time, take care of yourself, take care of each other, and take care of those bees. Bye for now.